What is up, Baton Rouge? Welcome back to the long-awaited edition of the Tiger Pride Podcast presented by 225 Magazine. I'm Mark Clements here, as always.
Hey, Mark. Jared Rose. Great to meet you. I don't know if you recall.
I don't know.
We used to do this weekly. I've been anxiously awaiting your triumphant return. If you want to let the people know what is up, Baton Rouge.
What is up, Baton Rouge? So, I guess we'll, yeah, might as well just get this.
I'm not going to press you into too many details,
but we've
been on the mend for a bit.
We can tell stories. I feel like we were just like half joking last episode about starting like a Jarrett Roser story time, like to end episodes. And then I come back with this shenanigans to kick it off. So post LSU beating Georgia in the SEC championship game, going to bring my buddy at my friend Danny's house. We're going to bring our next-door neighbor home. She lives a few houses down. I'm riding on the back of a golf cart. My friend is on the roof of a golf cart. Don't know why. Therefore, I don't have any handles. I'm just kind of like trying to maintain my balance and hold on to like the side rail.
Not off to a great start, but go on.
U-turn ensues. I didn't see the U-turn coming. I go off the back of the golf cart. Head hits concrete. I'm out like a light.
Like a light.
Next thing I know, I'm waking up in the hospital. I'm in the emergency room. I've got a pretty bad concussion.
Nasty.
And what is called a subarachnoid hemorrhage, which is a...
That's like a spider.
It sounds like it.
You got a spider concussion?
Something in my brain. I was in the outer portions of my brain had blood in it.
Knocked the webs loose.
Which is not good. It's not a good thing. So I had to sit in the ICU for a couple days while they monitored my brain waves and whatnot. Good to know. Bleeding's all gone. I was out of there. I mean, out of work for about a week or 10 days or so. My neurologist refused me permission to go back to work. So I had to go see a secondary doctor who told me I could go back to work. But this is all on a part-time basis and I had to limit my screen time. Anyway, follow-up CT scan happened this past week. Brain is good to go. We're back in the saddle.
You beat it.
But that is why the podcast has been on the back burner for a little bit, which is like the worst time for it to happen because a lot of things were happening, which we will, I guess, quickly sort of recap because it's kind of old news at this point, but still want to touch on it.
Yeah.
But that's kind of what's been going on in my life.
Yeah, you tried to pose that as this sounded like something that would have happened to me or something.
Yeah.
As though me giving you a really hard time once I realized you were like alive and functioning, kind of.
You have not been shy to make the jokes about my memory or self awareness, year it is, where we live, etc.
Yeah, but I don't recall through any of my injuries any brain bleeding or spider concussions.
You probably have never. I wouldn't say never. I don't know if you've fallen off of a golf cart.
I've taken some tumbles off some golf carts. Yeah. Not that severe by any stretch of the imagination.
I've talked to a lot of doctors and a lot of people who either work at a golf course or have in the past, and it's amazing the number of people who have injuries from golf carts. I was unaware. This is my first.
Live in more rural areas, which my dad has since, I guess, like the end of high school for me,
mm-hmm.
A lot of people have golf carts out countryside areas or I think some subdivisions even in the city and stuff like that. And so as many times as I've been on golf carts around a golf course, I've also been up and down the streets of his area on
this
golf
was
carts.
Not in a golf course neighborhood. This and, is in my buddy just happened to buy a golf cart. He lives in Kenilworth.
So we're driving around Kenilworth. At one point we caught some pretty mean speed going down a pretty steep hill. And I made my way out of that and rolled down the hill. And that was
no concussions?
No concussion. To my knowledge,
I'm learning.
Who knows, you know?
I'm learning.
I don't believe in modern medicine. But I took some nasty scrapes. I think everything was, you know, contrary to what you may believe by my pretty face. I think it was all cosmetic damage at that time.
I've had minimal cosmetic. You know, honestly.
That was the worst of my golf cart situations.
My friends joked with me, but like I'm like 90% sure the man bun like saved my life because I think the way that I fell, like this was my like cushion, and I mean I still was unconscious for a little bit and still had some bleeding. But I think
a sponsorship deal there? Like, is there someone who
I don't
makes
know? But
I got
a man bun Ken as part of from Santa, so I have that rocking in my life now. So there's got to
a man bun what?
A Ken Barbie.
Oh, Ken. Yeah.
He's
you kind of are man bun Ken.
I'm way better looking, but I mean, what can we say? So, since I've been gone, a lot of things happened. This happened on the night of LSU beating Georgia, which is obviously a big ordeal. Joe Burrow turns around to win the Heisman about a week later.
It was just the next game.
And then LSU beats Oklahoma in impressive fashion. I don't want to touch too much on Georgia. That's like super old news. At least the Oklahoma game is like, I'm not going to use the word fresh, but at least it's
fresh.
Somewhat new-ish. But I mean, obviously LSU stomps them 63-28, and it really wasn't even that close, to be honest. I think we both thought going into that game that LSU was going to win. I mean, we didn't get to talk about it because I was out. But I think we probably would have both felt pretty confident on it.
We didn't talk about it together very much.
No.
Yeah.
I don't think at all.
Yeah. But I did in the last couple hours of that game, after having been around the bowl week preparation and talking to guys on both sides, another media member asked me on the sideline how I thought the game was going to play out or what my expectations were. And I've told this story a couple times this week now on radio, or last week on radio. I pretty plainly said, I think they're about to mess these dudes up. And I didn't use the term mess. So I think they're about to...
You kept it PG, or you're keeping it PG.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Mess these dudes up. And I don't know if they thought I was joking, but they said, wait, really? Are you serious? And I said, yeah, I don't think this is going to be close. I don't have the impression right now with the matchups here and how prepared LSU is. And just LSU has clicked at the right time defensively, and I really believe in what's happening on the defensive side of the football. The offense has been phenomenal all season long. And just like we've talked about in some other big games, the confidence level and intangibles of this team and its leadership – and et cetera, any number of ways you want to look at what they bring from an X factor type standpoint is just above and beyond anything they're going to face. And I mean, we'll get into some of that with the national championship. Mm-hmm. But I think Clemson is a team that has a lot of similar characteristics, but I put LSU in an intangibles category above anyone else in the country most of the season, and certainly right now, as they've just continued to gain steam for months.
Yeah, and I will touch on this later on, but you're absolutely right, and it's almost to the point where like they've proven so many times throughout the season that you can rely on them, you can trust on them, but no matter what, it's been the biggest games or the games that have been quote unquote, you know, the trap games, they've come out and they've more than likely overperformed in almost all those games. So anything but to, you know, if you doubt them going into this game, I don't know what else they could have done all season to give you confidence that they can handle the national championship. But again, we'll get more into that. So you said they're going to mess them up. Did you think it'd be a damn near 40-point win? Do you think it would get that ugly?
It could have been just like the
it could have been worse.
The Zach Rosenberg little video clip that they've been running for the last couple years. And it should have been worse or whatever. They scored touchdowns on their last six possessions of that half after that one first half punt, and came out in the second half already up 49-14, and then just added those two touchdowns. They added the Joe Burrow run to cap a slower, long drive to start the half, and then the John Emery touchdown late. But if they had really wanted to, which I don't know, man. I mean, Joe mentioned them not letting up. They kept their foot on the gas. That game was in hand well before halftime. And if they needed to score more, they could have. And Oklahoma was just nowhere near being able to keep up on either side of the ball.
I think you touched on it too. The most impressive part to me, or you know, you mentioned the defense, but I mean the past few weeks, and it cracks me up that I still hear people talking about the Ole Miss game when they're like breaking down LSU Clemson and running quarterback. It was happening a lot before the Oklahoma game because of what John Rhys Plumlee did to this defense. And it just like, it cracks me up that people still bring that game up, because the last four games, I guess, the last four games after Ole Miss. Yeah,
last two regular season games, and then these past two postseason games.
They've just been on point, and I think we've talked about it a lot. They've found the right pieces kind of with the rotation, especially with Mo Hampton coming at safety. I think Kerry Vincent's kind of playing the best ball he's played in a while. And you kind of have all the right pieces falling into play. And then you mentioned the intangibles. especially offensively, when you have that kind of confidence in your offense that you know they can score, you know, in three plays on any given drive. They've come a long way from early in the year when they were still adjusting to how to play defense with this offense and how to balance the clock and all that kind of stuff. And I think there was a little bit of a learning curve. And I think it's safe to say this team is like very different than they were, let's say, when they played Texas. And that was kind of a shootout at the end. I think if you play Texas again, you know, now, it'd be a whole different story.
Yeah, this offense and defense have learned how to play together better. As you said, they've made some adjustments and picked up some things from a coaching standpoint over the course of the season. I think the biggest things ultimately are they're healthy as they've ever been. They're as confident as they've ever been. Guys like Cordell Flott, Mo Hampton, Marcel Brooks are seasoned to a degree at this point. And the coaches have a better handle on exactly what they can expect from some of those younger guys. The young guys have a better sense of what to expect from the game and from themselves. And the older players are all together healthy now for, you know, some of the first games this season and know what to expect from those younger guys too. And it's clicking on all cylinders at the right time of year.
Yeah. Were you surprised to see Chris Curry kind of lead that running back charge over Davis Price? I mean, I know Clyde's kind of health was up in the air and we saw him a couple of times, but were you surprised that Chris got so many carries?
If you had asked me a few days prior, I would have been very surprised. And even going into the game, I wasn't sure what to make of it. But there was kind of a sneaky hinting confidence from Joe Burrow when I was asking him about the young running backs, where I think everyone was waiting for Ty to be the guy because he'd done the most so far this season. And when I asked, and really in my mind during the media week was asking about mostly Ty and if John had kind of figured some things out where they could rely on him a little bit more. And Joe kind of hinted a couple times at Chris Curry having a really good week and, you know, expecting some big things from him. Mm-hmm. And so going into Saturday, I didn't know whether that was a senior quarterback making sure to keep his other guy's name in the mix or how much to buy into it. But it just had that kind of Joe smirk to it.
Which, where, like, in hindsight, you're like, this is...
It all kind of made that much more sense when you saw it play out. Good for Chris, man.
He looked good.
Yeah.
I mean, the way he runs is fun to watch because he is just a bulldozer just running, coming right at you. I know they call him old beast mode because of that Marshawn Lynch look to it. But 16 carries for 90 yards, a 5.6-yard average. I mean, I think, at least from my point of view, as versatile and as impactful as Clyde is to this offense, they could still get it done. You have enough, again, I mean, Coach O said it all week, and I think he wasn't lying. He was right. Clyde can do a little bit of everything, and you have three different guys behind him that are kind of have their niche, have their thing that they're the best at. I was surprised to see Chris that much. I thought, if you told me he would be the leading carrier, I wouldn't have been that surprised, but 16 carries versus 4 for TDP, I thought it'd be a little closer than that, but they, you know, to see how versatile he was and how they were still splitting him out wide, but I mean, all those carries up the middle and stuff, he looked really good. But I thought this team could get by without Clyde. It was so good to see him out there, and now you give him two more weeks to get fresh. I would expect he's back to full swing this week.
Going into that semifinal with Clyde's injury, that was my biggest hesitation for whether LSU would win that game by 40 or 50 points, or it would be a little bit closer, mm-hmm. be a 2 or 3 score game, because I was interested to see what they got from the ground game. And if they didn't get much from the young guys, what adjustments Oklahoma could make to, you know, take advantage of that rare shortcoming from the LSU offense and potentially help slow down the receivers, more than obviously they had an opportunity to do. And so to see that type of performance from Chris Curry, I thought was certainly big in that game and also big moving forward for this next game and for the future beyond this season, to kind of see that progress from him and that growing confidence. I was certainly more worried about, I thought that they would win by a couple scores without Clyde in that semifinal game. I think they would certainly need him, and it would be crucial against this Clemson defense, though. And so to have him not have to shoulder too much of a load, but show that he maybe wasn't as far off as some people were worried he might be, and now have those 2 weeks you mentioned and be back healthy for the national championship. I think just so many positives to take from the backfield 2 weeks ago, next week, and beyond.
He still busted out that truck stick once, which was fun to see. It was good. I wonder how much they would have leaned on Clyde had the game not been going the way they thought. And I think when they pulled ahead by a few scores super early, they kind of were more lenient to rest him later on in the game, which was big. Speaking of those injuries, I think it was, you've been more in touch than me, concussion boy, but I think the injuries.
What superpowers that come with?
That's no good ones. Hospital bills and limited screen time. Clyde, D-Lew, and Terrace, the only injuries that were concerning this week. Am I missing anybody that they've been kind of monitoring?
I don't think so.
Do we have any updates on those? Like, do they expect all three to be okay, or we're still kind of waiting to hear from Coach O? I mean, I would imagine Clyde's going to be pretty much full go once they get, you know, he's had 2 weeks off and he looked like he wasn't hurting much against Oklahoma. I haven't heard much on Terrace or D-Lew. I know they have a press conference on Sunday with both coaches and all the players are Saturday, but didn't know if there was any sort of updates or if those guys were held out, how concerning that might be, especially, you know, D-Lew with this O-line is kind of playing their best ball as well.
Yeah, so the other two guys have missed some practices to start some of the bowl preparation or start the new year and getting ready for this national championship. I have a feeling they're both going to be fine by the time game time rolls around. They're just kind of being precautious with this long lead up to this game because we're still, as we record this, we're at Monday for a next Monday game. And so they still have more than a typical game week preparation between now and then. And I feel like LSU is going to be all go.
I know D-Lew either tweeted or Instagrammed something after the game saying he'll be fine. I mean, that's not a doctor's permit, but, you know, doesn't seem to be a super long-term injury. And I would imagine the same with Terrace. But I think even, you know, you obviously want Terrace Marshall in there, but I think even without that, you have, if he were to happen to miss the game, you have some depth there with Derek Dillon, Racy McMath, Steph Sullivan, some other guys who could step in and fill that role that you feel pretty confident in. They're deep at receiver. But yeah, that leads us right into LSU versus Clemson. Throwdown in the Superdome. No.
Shout out Justin Jefferson with 4 touchdowns.
Okay, that's right. I don't know if we're going to do like players of the game or anything. But
oh yeah, we don't have to, but you have to mention his performance. Everything Joe and those guys did. Justin was just a monster.
That's an understatement.
Played himself potentially into that first round. Everyone wants to focus on Jamar the back half of the season, and Jets is a handful for opposing defenses.
What's funny is you could tell they were trying to take away the Blitnikoff winner all game, trying to limit Jamar and see if LSU could beat him without, you know, because they knew Clyde was hurt. You take out Jamar. Let's see if they can beat us with somebody else. And Justin said, okay. And I love his celebrations when he was counting, kind of showing to the crowd, 1, 2, 3, 4. But yeah, huge day for Jets. That was fun to watch. And I mean, a ton of other guys had some big days too. I mean, Thad got involved a lot. We mentioned Chris Curry. It was good to see that it wasn't, I mean, you know, you still have Jamar and you still have, I don't know how any defense kind of guards this receiving core, especially. This game kind of proved it more than any other, I think, that when you take away the number one weapon, which I guess we can say is Jamar, you don't have Clyde on the field as often. Can his offense still produce? And the answer is overwhelmingly yes. So going on to Clemson, man, did they escape Ohio State somehow? I don't know how they pulled that off.
Thanks.
Down 16-0 early. Ohio State settles for some field goals. And then has a chance to win it late, even after Clemson comes back and some kind of miscommunication. Justin Fields throws an interception in the end zone, and Clemson escapes. Just watching that game, I'm not trying to trash Clemson at all. They're a really, really good team, especially in the stat book. schedule isn't so strong, and they obviously pull off the win against Ohio State. But just watching that game, they just didn't look like the better team for most of the night, at least to me. And for them to come out on top is almost a better situation for LSU, because I think when Ohio State just has dudes all over the field.
Yeah.
Offense, defense. Trevor Lawrence and Travis Etienne are studs in their own right. T. Higgins is a great receiver, but man, they pulled that one out there behind.
So what are you asking me here? About the overall assessment of the festival or about the matchup for LSU?
Let's go overall assessment of the festival first. And if you kind of have the same takeaways that, like,
I didn't get a chance to watch a lot of it live, and I haven't recapped start to finish to this point. We were still dealing with LSU post-game, so I really caught kind of bits and pieces of the first three quarters, and then watched the fourth quarter, most of the fourth quarter, pretty straight through. So, I just kind of saw some scores playing out. I thought the continued emergence of Trevor Lawrence as a rushing threat.
That was weird, huh?
Is kind of interesting. That 67-yard touchdown right before halftime was more yards in that one play than he had ever recorded in an entire game of football at the college level. His previous long run was 28. And as much as that was a big game on national television, and so people saw just that one long run and see this one game, three of the last five games Clemson has played have been his three biggest rushing games of his career. And so it seems like it's something that they've found and started to rely on a little bit more late in this season, to realize he can do that. I don't know if it's a realization that he can do that, or if it's more as they get into these tighter games, they're willing to do that more when they didn't necessarily have to in some of the games earlier in the season. But now, as folks are able to key in a little bit more on Travis, Trevor has to keep them a little bit more honest, and it just is another threat that an already loaded offense brings to the table. So I thought that was kind of an interesting dynamic that I hadn't really prepared for, and Ohio State didn't necessarily look like they had either at that point. But fortunately, LSU seems to be pretty on top of that,
mm-hmm.
at least from a preparation standpoint, how it plays out when you actually have to deal with those two guys and some of the other rushing options they have, plus those really good wide receivers. That's a completely different ball game. But I know there were some controversial moments in that game. I don't know what to say about that really. But ultimately Clemson comes out with enough plays to win down the stretch in what became a back and forth game that had started looking like a blowout early on.
Yeah, that not fumble interception,
yeah.
That was iffy. It just, you had the same sense to me that going into the game, and I mean, I guess you didn't get to watch as much of it, but that Ohio State was probably the better team. And I'm not saying Clemson pulled it out there, performed a miracle, but Ohio State seemed like a much bigger threat to LSU, especially when you factor in, like, the Joe Burrow factor and kind of against his hometown team. Is that whole storyline, and then they had three dudes in the top like 10 or whatever it was for the Heisman. Just all these factors. It just seemed like Clemson's kind of flown under the radar and just hasn't been as elite nationally as they were, as Ohio State's been this year.
Yeah, Clemson has flown under the radar. I think Clemson has still been a fantastic team, and mm-hmm. especially the back portion of this season for the most part. A lot of people, because of the fact that their schedule hasn't been particularly challenging, saw that scare against North Carolina early, wrote them off as not being that great, and then never really looked back because there weren't a lot of high-profile games to bother with, and you knew they were going to win, and so people weren't that worried about it. But I thought they've played really well mm-hmm. most of the back half of the season. And so I think both of them posed, and now Clemson poses, interesting challenges to LSU. I don't think either one of them's a cakewalk for LSU
No.
by any means, but some of the playmakers in different places on Ohio State's defense probably worried me more than is the case on Clemson's defense. And so I feel good about this matchup for LSU. And by the same token, some of some of Ohio State's offensive playmakers worried me a little bit more, but I think that was kind of what and what. There were concerns for the LSU defense containing either one of these offenses. And then you trade the Joe versus Ohio State talk for the LSU now has to beat the reigning national champions.
Did you know that Travis Etienne was from Louisiana?
Yeah.
You know that?
So I tweeted about it after the game that it was interesting to me that I was very engaged in Travis's recruitment.
Yeah.
At that point. And so I had a lot of conversations with him and people close to him, was very aware of how everything was unfolding, was very aware of some of the frustration of LSU dragging its feet. And I tweeted something about how it's interesting now that this national championship is an opportunity for Travis to come home, play in his home state against LSU, just knowing some of that history. I'm not trying to make the game about Travis by any means. It's much bigger than that, but it's just kind of, as much as people have been waiting for the Joe Burrow versus Ohio State storyline, it's kind of an interesting switch flip over to Travis. And fans' reactions to that were interesting, including somebody telling me sternly that Travis Etienne was from South Florida. I was like, well, I don't know, like, who I was visiting all those times in Jennings, Louisiana, or if I hit some sort of wormhole at some point. But
concussion, maybe.
Yeah, maybe I caught a concussion at some point and thought I was in Jennings, but was really taking days out to go visit Miami.
You have been traveling a lot.
Yeah, recently. I have. But I don't remember what we were talking about before the Travis stuff. I think we've seen a Clemson team that people have criticized as maybe not being tested as much as their SEC opponent fare well against Alabama in recent years and win a game a couple years ago that people weren't giving them a lot of chance to, and then a game that was theoretically supposed to be a lot closer and people, I think, were leaning a little bit toward Bama. They came out and just housed the Tide. And so I think there are a lot of aspects of this program and where Clemson is as a program and so many guys back from that team last year, including those two guys in the backfield we talk about, amongst others, that Clemson's going to come out here and be ready to play in New Orleans on the big stage against LSU, and Dabo's going to play his whole little old Clemson tune and they're going to rally around it and all that. And so I think people have underestimated Clemson often in recent years, and it's tough to do so.
So I'm glad you said that, because I had the game against Alabama pulled up just to kind of recap, and I watched some of the quick highlights last week just to get a jog my memory on that one. Alabama went into that game as a 6.5-point favorite. I believe LSU is 5.5 in this one, somewhere in that ballpark. So it is very similar. What I forgot is how, I mean, this is also credit to Clemson. I'm not trying to make this all about Bama, but how poorly Bama played, especially defensively. I mean, Tua had maybe his worst game. He threw two interceptions, including a pick six. But the Bama defense, look, I mean, so this is, they forced a punt on Clemson's opening drive. They threw a pick six on their first drive. And after that, Clemson scored a touchdown. They had one more punt. And then after that punt in the second quarter, touchdown, touchdown, field goal, touchdown, touchdown, end of game. Or I guess a punt. There was a minute left to end of the game. In the middle portion of that game, Bama's defense could not stop Clemson at all. And their offense started to stall. Tua wasn't playing super well. And that's how Clemson kind of pulled ahead. I mean, because I'm watching the highlights of this game, I didn't realize it was 16-16 or 17-16 at the open. I thought it felt like a blowout the entire game, but it really wasn't. Clemson wound up pulling away. So I think, I mean, going into this game, there are a lot of similarities in the sense that last year people were kind of doubting Clemson because of their schedule, and this year it's the same type thing. Hasn't been a strong schedule. To your point, since that North Carolina game, and I think we read this off on the podcast like back pre-injury, but since that North Carolina game when everyone read them off, their scores have been 45-14, 45-10, 59-7, 59-14, 55-10, 52-3, 38-3, 62-17. I mean, they've blown out every opponent they face. So, you know, again, not super strong teams, but teams they're supposed to be beating, and they're beating them very handily. And I think they enter this game, I know, like you said, Dabo's playing that undercard dog or underdog card very, very strongly.
There comes that concussion.
See, I knew you were going to say that.
You had to.
And it's just it's an interesting dynamic because LSU is on the complete opposite end where they have this high-powered offense, this new-look LSU offense. Joe Burrow wins the Heisman, a spot LSU's never been in, playing with all this confidence. And Clemson's kind of been, again, the exact opposite, flying under the radar. Everyone's doubting us. We have to win 30 in a row. We play nobody, all this stuff. And so this matchup is like super, super interesting and very hard to dissect and digest because LSU's schedule has been one of the toughest in the country. They've had a couple ups and downs. Clemson's has been a trash schedule. They've had a lot of ups and just the one down. And here we are, you know, number one scoring offense versus the number one scoring defense. It's going to be a super interesting dynamic. And for some reason, this always comes full circle when we talk about this game. We're publishing a special LSU issue of the Business Report coming out later next month. And I've had to watch a ton of national analysts kind of dissect this game and try to figure out what they think. And it always ends up coming back to Trevor Lawrence versus Joe Burrow at the end of the day. And I am amazed. Again, I know that I tweeted this out a couple days ago. I know that I'm biased living in Baton Rouge and being surrounded by LSU stuff. But there's so many national analysts who, when you go down the Lawrence versus Burrow train in this game, if you had to, you had to pick one quarterback to lead your team, forget everyone else, you had to just pick your quarterback. The majority of people I've seen have picked Trevor Lawrence over Joe Burrow, which to me, that amazes me because the season that he's had this year, I know Lawrence has the experience. That's what everyone that I've listened to always resorts back to, is he's played in this game before, he's seen it before, he's never lost a game in his college career, all this stuff. That still blows my mind that somebody that people are still somehow indirectly doubting Joe Burrow. If I asked you that question, Lawrence versus Burrow, you have a one-off, just pick someone in the game to lead your team. Who would you take Lawrence also?
Do you want me to surprise you?
I want you to be honest.
Because it's not going to happen. Everything you just said, I agree with. For this game, I think one thing is, as media members, as humans, we have a tendency to really, it becomes really difficult to change our mind once we make a decision or make an assessment and have an opinion on something. And so a lot of people have viewed Trevor Lawrence as the golden child for the last 2 years and realize how big his potential is long term and just can't shake this idea that new age football Jesus is the end all be all of quarterbacks in the moment, despite the fact that he's had some ups and downs at times this season, a little bit more of it early than late. Certainly he's played much better the back half of the season than the front half of the season. And he very well may long-term be the better NFL guy. At the same time, people were so hesitant to believe that Joe Burrow could be the real deal. And everyone's just waiting in, I say everyone, a lot of people I think are waiting for some sort of slip up because what they've seen based on what their pre-held notion was, everything they've seen has been far too good to be true from Joe Burrow. And so they're waiting for that nick in the armor to say, oh, well, you know, there's that one moment of weakness and just kind of feel like that validates an opinion they had a year ago about this guy a little bit more. There's no one in the country you take at any position over anyone else at their same position right now than you take Joe Burrow to win a football game.
I agree.
In this 2019-20 season. And it's absurd.
It's not only on the field. It's what you talked about earlier, his leadership and the intangibles that he brings to the table and that attitude. He's going to lower his shoulder and hit you. If he gets popped, it's going to only elevate his game. I mean, all that goes into it. And I've just been amazed at how many people, again, no one's trashing Joe Burrow. Everyone, all these analysts say how good of a season he's had. But
a lot of them can't quite believe how good it is.
Yeah.
And there's still something that it just
doesn't like, not like fluky, but there's something about like, yeah, he's due for a poor game or something.
It's real and it's spectacular and it's not going away.
A straight up stat comparison. Obviously Joe's going to win all the numbers, but just so you see like where they stand, Joe 371, he's completed more passes than Trevor Lawrence has attempted. FY 371 of 478. That is 77.6%. Trevor Lawrence is 250 of 370. It's 67.6%, so 11% difference. Joe has 5,208 yards. Trevor, 3,431. Joe Burrow has 55 touchdowns. 6 INTs. Trevor with 36 touchdowns. 8 INTs against what is, I would say, unarguably a worse schedule, facing worse defenses.
Yeah.
So, again, this
That's
whole...
a big part. And I'm taking Joe Burrow 9 or 10 times out of 10 in a game of around the world if they're shooting hoops.
Dude, you saw that?
I did see that.
What a guy. He's stroking it, man. This all comes back to what you said earlier, too, is... lost my point.
Concussion, dude. Concussion boys' superpowers are out of hand.
What did you say earlier? You made a really good point to start it.
Oh.
About Joe?
No, about... I had... No, it's how it's hard to doubt this team. How you mentioned that earlier. They've done so much this season that it's hard to go into this game and doubt them. And it seems silly to almost blindly just pick LSU, but it's almost like what they face some of the, I mean, 7 top 10 wins. Again, I know Texas has kind of fallen off the map a little bit, so if you don't want to count that one, whatever. But I mean, 7 top 10 wins in a season, or I guess 6, this could be the 7th. They faced all kinds of defenses, multiple different good looking offenses, some of the toughest D lines in the country. And they've come away from every single one of those with an incredibly dynamic offense, a defense that has rounded the corner. It's very hard to pick against LSU. And again, I get Clemson is a great team, and they surprised everyone last year, and they could do the same thing again on Monday. There's nothing LSU's done this year that makes me think that this game's going to get out of hand in that direction.
And as any criticism toward Joe or LSU or doubts or whatever, it's, I don't know if you're familiar with this, but this is Joe during the preparation.
Hey, I'm sorry, I didn't see you there. I was too busy blocking out the haters.
Because he doesn't care. He doesn't care what anyone has said to this point, will say. He's the way he approaches everything and the way this team, I'm not going to say by proxy in a sense of Joe leading all of it, because they have, I've said a few times throughout the season, they have fantastic leadership top to bottom, great veteran leadership. And the young guys are guys that carry themselves in the right way. And the perfect example of that is obviously Stingley as a freshman and everything he's done this season. But there are a lot of other guys that have the right mentality and approach and work ethic, et cetera, and it all just kind of feeds into one another. And Joe's certainly at the forefront of that, but isn't alone. They're going to go in there and they're going to be fine. And it is going to be much like any other game they've played this season, both in a approach standpoint and in a sense that they're going to have a lot of success. They will play the best team they've played all year. Mm-hmm. So it might look a little bit different, certainly, than the semifinal or a lot of other games, but I feel good about it. And interestingly, one of my followers on Twitter brought this to my attention a few weeks ago at the end of the regular season in the wake of Clemson beating the hell out of Alabama this past January. I tweeted, announcers talking about Clemson seniors, quote, all of them wanted to come back for a chance at Alabama and a chance to win a national title, ... And I said, LSU fans are looking at Devin White, Rashard Lawrence, Damian Lewis, Mike Divinity, Christian Fulton and company, like with a little kind of stare, sort of turn the head to the side gif. And all those guys came back except for Devin, obviously. Mm-hmm. And somebody asked me, they kind of criticized and said, it doesn't matter if they can't score. The defense played well all year. And I said, look, personnel-wise, the offense brings almost everyone back. They add a couple good immediate pieces. Hopefully avoid much shuffling up front. The Texas A&M and Central Florida games to end the season provide some reason for optimism schematically as well. This team has a chance to be special next year. And then, obviously, a lot of that falls into place. They also add Joe Brady, which helped make my point look that much better.
Yeah.
But there are some similarities to this LSU team, to that Clemson team a year ago in some ways.
We're getting to score predictions in a minute. Is there any one particular or, I guess, few groups of matchups that you think are going to be key that you're kind of keeping your eye on, whether it's – I mean, Etienne's had an incredible year, and just watching him run, especially against Ohio State, not that I caught a ton of Clemson games this year, but I watched – a lot of the A&M game earlier in the year, and then a lot of the Ohio State game, And that, I mean, he's been an incredible back all year. Obviously, a guy LSU missed that on. He's going to have some extra motivation going up against his hometown school. But any matchups in particular that you think are going to be key if this game doesn't go right for LSU?
Yeah, I think both up front on both sides is really interesting because Clemson's going to have success up front on offense and establish the run, whether that be Travis having a lot of success or a lot of focus going toward Travis and Trevor being able to find his way out and escape and hurt them and make them be honest and open some things up a little bit more for Travis at some point. But if Clemson can't establish a pretty strong, they don't have to win the game running the football, but they have to establish success running the football and give themselves the opportunity then to try and attack LSU a little bit over the middle of the field more than anything. But they've got to kind of show that balance on that side of the ball. On the flip side, one of the reasons I feel good about LSU is because this Clemson defensive front isn't what Clemson's defensive front had been the past couple of years. They obviously, yep, three veterans went in the first round from that defensive line alone this past year, and so it's a little bit younger of a group. They're not getting into opposing backfields quite at the same clip as they had, and so I feel good about LSU's offensive line and Joe having a little bit more time and Joe being able to do the things, and just like we've talked about since July, as long as there is the time and opportunity to make some plays, LSU is going to be pretty difficult for anyone to stop. If some of those young guys from Clemson do step up, or if defensively Venables and company are able to find a way to get into the backfield a few more times than I'm necessarily expecting them to be able to, I think that could get kind of interesting.
They lost three defensive linemen in the first round, yeah, last year. I didn't realize. I mean, in a fourth, Alec Bryan went in the fourth.
Right. So they, I mean, that defense was nasty last year. They're still very good, but up front, they don't have quite,
yeah,
the same level of experience and older guys. And
that's the thing is, I feel like every time we talk about what does it take, what kind of defense will it take to slow down LSU's offense? And the one thing we keep saying is get to Joe Burrow quick before he can release the ball, which...
You need to be able to get to him without bringing extra guys, yeah, too, which for most of the game. And I don't know that this year, this Clemson team is going to be able to do that against an offensive line from LSU that's played much better.
I think only Auburn's done that all year.
Yeah, and Auburn's defensive line is as good as any defensive, yeah, line in the country. It's similar in that regard, to in terms of just the dudes they have up there, to Clemson last year. But if Clemson has to start bringing guys to avoid Joe just picking them apart, who are you bringing? You've got five skill position guys around Joe for him to get the ball to that are going to win most one-on-one matchups, even in this game. And so Isaiah Simmons and some of those guys that Clemson has, they're going to make things more challenging for the LSU receiving core, in which I'm including Clyde, than most teams have been able to do this season. But they're not going to shut them down. No. Not all night.
I mean, I don't know. Just like you said, if you bring extra pressure, I mean, who do you leave open? I mean, again, even if you make Joe check down, he's not afraid. There's been plenty of drives all season. He checked down to Thad, checked down to Clyde, checked down to whoever it is over the middle, you know, the third or fourth option. I mean, they'll dink and dunk you all day. So, yeah, I mean, that's interesting. The biggest thing for me is I think I have almost no worries LSU's offense will be able to put up 35 plus in this game. I think it's, you know, like we said all year, if somebody's going to beat LSU, it's going to have to be in a shootout. So I think LSU being able to get pressure on Trevor Lawrence, limit his potential running ability. That's now his new thing. I don't know. But man, they've got some...
Can't give up 67-yard touchdowns. But I think LSU's defensive line is strong enough that I have confidence that they're not going to get run over and manhandled. And on the perimeter, trying to contain the multiple running options out of the Clemson backfield, I think the way that the linebacking core for LSU has continued to play, and now you bring Mike Divinity back into the mix, and you have Pat Queen and Jacob Phillips playing exceptionally. Kalavon Chaisson's playing the best football of his season, certainly. And I think those dudes are very fast and able to get sideline to sideline and contain a lot of that, more so than even Ohio State was able to. And with a healthy Grant Delpit behind them,
yep,
and that confidence level that they have in him in the back of the defense, and then everything that further allows you to do with a Jacoby Stevens, I feel really good about their ability to kind of hem Clemson in and contain it.
How big is it that they get Divinity back for this game, especially that it's in his hometown?
I think great for Mike. I think it's a nice piece to have. I'm interested to see the exact role he plays. He's been away from the team for – I mean, he's been off the field right on Saturdays for a couple months now. But I won't be surprised if he makes some big plays. And to have a guy that they look at, his teammates look at as a leader come game day on the field, and his ability to communicate with them – I think having him on one side and Kalavon on the other side, and then that wealth of other linebackers that have been playing so well, I think it's going to be tough sledding for Clemson's offense in a lot of ways. I think they'll still have their moments, but I think the way LSU's defense is playing right now, and then you add Mike into that,
yeah,
it's going to be tough for them to keep up with what ultimately I think LSU's offense would do to anybody in the country.
They can just hit you in so many different ways. I mean, you mentioned Kalavon and Divinity on the outside. The D-line's getting pressure in their own right. Marcel Brooks has looked like he's been a monster the past few weeks. Then you factor in the guys like you mentioned, Grant Delpit, Jacoby Stevens playing a little bit higher in their safety roles. They can, given Dave Aranda 2 weeks to prepare and come up with some creative schemes to get after the quarterback, I think it should be pretty exciting, and it's hard to not feel confident in LSU. With that said, prediction time. LSU averages 48.9 points per game. Clemson only gives up 10.6. While they average 45.3, LSU gives up 21.2. What are you going to go with, Jarrett?
I think both of those numbers are going to trend closer to the LSU side of things. I think LSU is going to score closer to its season average, then Clemson will be able to keep it down. And I think Clemson is going to have trouble reaching its own season scoring average against an LSU defense that I think is playing much better. Honestly, I'm not going to sit here and say I'd be shocked if LSU lost this game,
mm-hmm,
but I'd almost be more surprised if they lost than if they blew out Clemson.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. The way they've, especially because you know, just like Oklahoma, they're not taking their foot off the gas until that game is signed, sealed, delivered, locked, and loaded. I mean, even this game could get worse theoretically because it's a natty. And I guess the last game, you theoretically are trying to save Burrow, make sure he doesn't get hurt, take out some starters or something. This one, when do they call the dogs off?
So I'm zeroing in somewhere around LSU 38, Clemson 27. I really feel good about the way this sets up for LSU in a lot of football matchup ways. I like the way it sets up for LSU from a standpoint of playing in the Superdome and the excitement going into this game for them and for the fan base around them and what the atmosphere is going to look like. And I've felt all year that if LSU, from a football standpoint, can be in a close game, Joe Burrow and those guys are going to find a way to pull it out. One way or another, they're coming out with a W. Whatever it takes, they're getting it done. And you've seen that in some games. You've seen that more often in some just key plays, even in games that have become blowouts, where it looks like, how the heck is Joe Burrow getting out of this one? And they just find a way. And I don't think this game's going to be even that close to where they have to kind of scratch and claw it out at the end. But I have trouble seeing them not winning this game. Again, I wouldn't be shocked. Clemson has surprised people before and is a great football program. But I lean so heavily toward LSU finding their way to pull it out.
I have a very similar point spread or final score spread, but I think it'll be a little bit higher scoring. I had it at about a 42-31. There's just so many good athletes on the field. I mean, to be fair, good athletes defensively as well. But I think both teams put together some drives, and I think LSU – what I can't decide is if I think it's going to be one of those that LSU kind of has in the bag. Clemson scores a few late to make it closer, right, or if LSU has to score late to kind of pull ahead, a la the Texas game.
From a where the score ends up standpoint, I'm torn a little bit between, oh, it opens up into a shootout for a bit here, and then it gets into the 40s.
Yeah, very well could happen.
Or if Clemson hopes to sustain some drives that eat some clock,
yeah,
and take some possessions away from Joe Burrow and company. And so I lean a little bit more toward that, them being able to slow the game down enough with their offensive success at times that – Joe doesn't have as many opportunities to march down the field. And I do kind of think that Clemson's able to add something late potentially because those dudes aren't going to quit by any stretch. And so if it is a 17-point game late, I won't be surprised to see Clemson add another 7 or 8 points, even if it becomes kind of inconsequential seemingly in the last couple minutes.
I feel like if there's a shot – or Clemson's best shot would be they're going to have to capitalize on some big plays because LSU has been vulnerable to those multiple times this year. I feel way better about LSU stopping a sustained drive where Clemson's trying to burn the clock and, you know, do 4 to 6 yards to play, whatever, and just kind of march down the field. But if they take a few shots, I think LSU can be vulnerable to that. Although some of those dudes in the secondary have played really, really well of late. I mean, Carey's interception on that trick play against Oklahoma was – I mean, if you're watching on TV like I was, he just was not even on the screen when the ball comes out. And then all of a sudden he's flying across, picks it off. A great read by him. But
he's track fast. Like, he carries, legit. Carey can fly.
Yeah.
Believes in himself.
No concussions either. All right. Well, we'll both be down in New Orleans, I guess, Saturday and Sunday, and then Monday for the big game. I'm not going to ride any golf carts in the meantime, so don't – no worries.
Thank goodness, man.
I'm just going to lay off the golf – I'm going to retire golf carts for – a hot minute.
Golf carts are becoming like your motorcycle for athletes where you just need to sit that out. Maybe depending on what your employer says, like maybe you can ride it a little bit in the off season, but not during the season, man. Too much to risk.
And I'm definitely not riding in the back. If I go anywhere, it'll be sitting front seat with maybe a guy on each, you know, somebody on each side, just kind of squish me in like a human, human seat belts.
I just want to know what happened to the person on the roof because you flew off the back.
He was fine.
Okay.
But wow. he had both he's on the roof with both handles. If you picture a golf cart, it's got the little, you know, you got like a little –
I've seen such things.
And he's on the roof with both handles in his hand. So I got one hand.
You couldn't grab onto the, like, okay, I got you.
Yeah.
You had one hand.
One hand was occupied. Other hand was on the rail, but wasn't enough. So anyway, no golf carts in New Orleans, just press conferences. Be sure to follow Jarrett on Twitter at Jarrett Roser. I'm on Twitter at MarkClements225. We'll give you a recap version of the podcast after LSU takes care of business. And we may touch a little bit on the recruiting trail, too, because all that happened. But that's for another day.
Concussion boy, what are the secrets to your power?
Oh, a little Tenacious D to close it out. I like it.